first off, for Warzone, for new people coming to it, you know, if you're trying to get the fluff as quickly as possible, is going the movie route and checking out the Ron Perlman movie the way to go. I'm Chris.
And I'm Owen.
And this is the Dead Wargamer Society.
Hi, listeners. Today we have a really special guest with us. Chris and I are both really excited to have on the show. We have the designer of Warzone Eternal, an upcoming game from Resnova Games that's bringing back the game Warzone. We're here today to talk about Warzone as a setting. It was a popular tabletop war game from the 90s, and it's had a few different versions. So Brian's going to share his thoughts on this, and we're going to talk about this as a dead game. For those of you who aren't familiar with Brian, he's worked on two of my favorite games, Chris's favorite games as well, War Machine. He wrote the original fiction for War Machine Mark I. He also has worked extensively on Dark Age. So Chris and I are, suffice to say, pretty big fans. You might recognize his sweet, sweet voice from many a Cool Mini or Not Kickstarter video. He, in addition to all the great tabletop war game stuff he's done, he's also developed his own RPG setting and is extensively involved in RPGs across my local area, the Midwest. Just in general in the industry, he's done just about a bit of everything. He's sculpted models, painted models. He has an excellent YouTube channel called Tales from a Professional Nerd. Please welcome to the show, Brian C.P. Steele.
Hello. Trying to not have my voice be the normal voice. I'll do voices all this whole time.
Excellent, excellent. How have you been, Brian?
I have been good. I mean, as good as anyone can be. I mean, obviously, everybody's dealing with the virus and the shut-in in their own ways, but you know, everyone here's healthy and for the most part happy. So I can't complain. Things have been good.
Awesome. Have you been painting any miniatures in these trying times?
I have doing a little bit of commission work here and there, but honestly, not to. I know that you guys cover a lot of indie and small time games, but I've been painting a lot of my new Necrons. Nice. I'm a 40K player from the early 90s, and the fact that we got all these new models for my Necrons have kept me busy. So, yeah, I've been. I would like to say that I've had a lot of time to paint, but honestly, professionally, things have been going really, really well, and I haven't had a lot of time to sit in front of the paint stand. It's been almost all keyboard time.
Well, I mean, that's a bummer. You can't get more hobby time in, but all facts considering, the reason sounds like a pretty good one. So, congrats on getting all that work.
Exactly.
How about you, Chris? What have you been up to?
So I finally got my airbrushes back from getting refurbished at Badger. So I used the opportunity to try out those new Zenithal Turbo Shift paints from Turbo Dork.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Turbo Dork guys.
Yeah. So the new one, the Prism Power, which switches from a pink to almost like a cobalt, I used for at least like 6 different projects all at the same time. So that's been a lot of my past couple of weeks is everything from some Dark Age. I was doing St. Luke, using a lot of that kind of transition. I had some Battletech stuff, some Warcry stuff, some Necrons too. And I think at least like a few more things on that board. But it's fun to work with. I think I finally got like the thinning ratio down for what to use, the amount of flow improver to use with the amount of the paint so that it doesn't immediately like solidify inside of your airbrush. Just because the suspension medium that they use for the color shift flakes can sometimes turn to like a gel almost.
Mm-hmm.
And if that gets like stuck inside the airbrush, it can be a little bit difficult to remove. So,
oh, so you're anyway, using it through an airbrush.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Using it through the airbrush is awesome because it gives such a uniform like coat across it. I guess after talking about it all this amount, I might need to post it up in the group. Here's my video. I'm like, this is how it turned out. But yeah, it does. It sprays very like smoothly. The flow improver is less for like the like a smooth spray, and more so it doesn't solidify in the airbrush itself.
Gotcha.
It's a lot easier to work with than brushing it on, especially for like the color shifting gradients.
Yeah, because I've right. found that it takes several passes with the brush to do it, to get it right. But I love the stuff, and I love the, as a company, they're great. I had my first bottle splosion a couple weeks ago, where I went to give one a squeeze, and the whole thing just kind of imploded all over my paint palette. And I sent the Turbo Dirt guys a picture and was like, my first explosion, and they were able to guess the color from my picture. They were like, oh, it's one of those. And they not only sent me a new bottle of that, but they went ahead and sent me all their Black Friday special paints.
Wow.
Kind of just in the package. They're like, hey, tell us how these came out. And I was like, how great is, like, like I said, they're great guys. They're coming up with awesome stuff. I saw, what is it? Is it Warcry or is it Conquest that they've got an actual like model and paints set?
I think it's Conquest.
Is it Conquest? Okay.
I think it's is Conquest the Parabellum one?
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, they came out with official paint sets for that.
Which is cool. I'm glad that people are giving those guys some love, because they've treated me right in the past, and it's neat to see. I always like to see when a small company is like starting to gain steam, you get momentum, and definitely getting a game like Conquest behind you and being like, hey, you know, let's start putting our products together into packaging, it's fantastic. So kudos to those guys.
Yeah. Nice. So Owen, what about you? What have you been doing hobby wise?
Much like Brian, I've moved away a little bit from the indie or dead games in the past couple of weeks. I've got some BattleTech on my table. I got the new clam boxes for BattleTech from Catalyst Game Labs. And I've also got a lot of Age of Sigmar. Some of my buddies and I will rent a cabin, usually in the end of February, early March timeframe, and just go up for a long weekend and just do a bunch of painting marathons. So I'm actually planning on getting about 2,000 points of Stormcast Eternals ready for both Age of Sigmar and for Warcry. So hopefully in the next month or so, I should have that all done, which will be nice to have. And then when everything gets normal in the world again, we can go out and actually play some games with those. So yeah, it's been a lot of putting stuff together, basing, all that goodness, but should turn into painting in the near future.
Cool.
All right. So with that all said, let's talk about Warzone. So it's a little bit hard to search for Warzone because there's a Call of Duty game named Call of Duty Warzone. So you get a lot of hits on that, but it's actually a tabletop game based in the Mutant Chronicles universe. A brief summary of it is it was originally released at the end of 1995 or beginning of 1996, designed by Bill King. It was published through six different companies worldwide in its first and second edition, although folks in the U.S. are probably most familiar with either Heartbreaker or Target Games. There have been a handful of editions of the game, and I want to be cautious here in differentiating between editions or versions. The first two, I would call editions of the game, were put out by the Heartbreaker / Target crowd and were a similar game. In the mid-2000s, early 2010, a company called Protoss released a game called Warzone Resurrection, which was a bit different and a bit mechanically different than the first two editions of Warzone. And additionally, Brian is working on a new version or edition or whatever you want to call it of Warzone as well. Because of this difference in different manufacturers, it's hard to really pin it down to specifically one scale. The originals were 28. I think Protoss were a touch larger. The games have typically used a D20. In the different games versions have had different size forces, anywhere from a battalion to a full army with large vehicles. So this one's a little bit harder to talk about than some of the other dead games we've talked about, but we're still going to give it the old college try anyway. So in terms of background, we've got the master here. So Brian, you want to give people like a quick elevator pitch of the background of Warzone / Mutant Chronicles?
Oh, easy peasy. There's actually also there's one other Mutant Chronicles / Warzone style game that came out, but it was so fast that there are people that saw boxes of them on shelves and was like, wait, what? And the game was already gone. Fantasy Flight had a pre-painted plastic version of a Mutant Chronicle miniature game.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Completely different scale. It was a completely different scale, totally worked on a different, like, it was not, it didn't go on any of their flight like path systems or any of the previously established dice systems. It was its own game in completely in entirety. And I want to say that they only had it on the shelves for less than a year, like 6 months. And then suddenly it was just like the license went to someone else. Fantasy Flight as a marketing structure, if something is not doing well for them, they do not hang on to it. They don't hope for the best. They go, you know what? Cut our losses. And that's what it seemed like it did for them, is that they, whatever it was, it did not excel. And so they moved on. And that was, I believe that was right before Protos took over. I don't know the exact dates or anything like that. I'm not that well versed in the marketing stuff, but fluff wise, to get back onto the more impressive, you know, the part that people actually want to hear about. So the Mutant Chronicles, basically take human Earth, social, like socio-political, situation and speed it up almost to like a Shadowrun level, where it becomes, there's only a handful of super crazy mega corporations that actually run the world. I want to say it's at that time when the beginning of when the world kind of starts to fall apart, there's like five mega corporations run everything. And then at some point they realize that they have turned Earth into a poisonous hellhole. You know, it's too polluted. There's nothing left. You know, there's more city than more city than wilderness. And so they venture out and start finding their own kind of extra Terran locations. Each corporation kind of says, "Hey, we're going to take Mars. We're going to take this place." The moon becomes one entire city called Luna City. Luna City is run by sort of like almost like kind of a UN. It's called the Cartel / the Brotherhood of Man, which is a heavily Catholicized, very fire and brimstone style church. It is humanity's way of trying to justify the things that they're doing to each other, is by having this hardcore religious backbone that they can lean on and go, "Hey, Cardinal says it's okay for us to do this, so we can do this." as they expand outward, they find a planetoid on the opposite side of Pluto called Nero. And on Nero, they uncover it looks like someone's been here before, but obviously humans haven't. This is way too far out of, you know, this is so far out that no one's ever been here before, but this looks like an actual structure. It looks like a set of metal doors. And so, because humans are intrinsically stupid, they started opening these doors, and they started knocking on these doors, and each door was harder to get past than the first. And every time that they blasted through one of these doors, somewhere, something in the human controlled space, things started to go bad. Technology started to fail. You know, like entire worlds would black out for 24 hours. You're just for seemingly no reason, just like, nope, you got no power. humanity in like the lower regions, like the ghettos and stuff, would start to mutate. Like they actually would start showing legitimate non-human creatures would spawn out of humanity. People started losing their mind. You know, it was very old kind of not Exodus where people left. What is the biblical end of world? Armageddon. Revelations? It's very Armageddon style. These huge things were happening that people couldn't explain, other than the fact that it happened to coincide with these doors opening, these giant sealed doors. And upon opening the seventh door, is when the Brotherhood recognized that they started to actually perform miracles. They called those miracles the art. And there was a complete collapse of technological infrastructure. Basically, in today's terminology, Bluetooth stops talking to each other and the internet goes away. Mm. And so it kind of collapsed everything into, I hate to use the term a dark age because of past games. but it did make it, it referred basically almost to a Warzone / Mutant Chronicles, almost like a diesel punk. They had to rely on actual like fuel engines and physically, you know, a physical like torque engines and things. It wasn't all about, you know, here's my nuclear fission suit. You know, it wasn't that kind of it wasn't those kinds of that kind of technology. You had to rely on actual like radio communications, you know, or hard-lined phones between one place to the next. You didn't have cell phones anymore. You know, that wasn't going to work. And it was in this sort of this chaos that reigned, where the corporations were like, okay, we got to reevaluate how we do things, that a new corporation popped up called Cybertronic, which baffled everyone because Cybertronic had, well, they had Bluetooth, they had cell phones, they had technology, they had like literal cybernetics on, like they were replacing body parts with advanced technology that wasn't going to become corrupted by whatever's out there in the universe. And the rest of the mega corporations looked at them and was like, no, you can't just be the new kid on the block and suddenly be better than all the rest of us. And Cybertronic's answer was that, you know, we've already checked in with the Cardinal, and the Brotherhood and the Cartel has looked over all of our technology, and they can't see any reason why we can't, you know, profit from the fact that for inexplicable reasons, our stuff works. Sorry, you know, sorry that yours doesn't, but ours does. And this new corporation springs up out of nowhere, the Cybertronic. And that's another one of the factions in the game, is these crazy high-tech guys in a world where, like, you still have dudes with crank radios on their back in war. Then out of all of this kind of areas of these giant cities that, you know, if you took away all their high technology, you know, these guys are living like, you know, Blade Runner style ghettos. And then these, you know, the mutants started to kind of conform to actual like cults, where it was no longer just these random mutant happenings. It actually would be entire sections of towns would fall to these strangely organized mutants and like their creepy leaders. And then at some point, the creepy leaders started to actually manifest even further and beyond. People who read like 40K fiction and stuff, where it's like the chaos cults that sort of just kind of slowly rise, and then one afternoon, the leader of the chaos cult just throws back his hood and he goes, "Oh, I'm actually a demon." It kind of sort of got that way. And the Dark Legion revealed itself. The Dark Legion is basically all of the evil, the super supernatural evil that the doors that humanity opened kind of unleashed upon our world. And they have five requisite gods that are the factions of the Dark Legion, each one kind of representing a different aspect of this sort of horrible evil. But collectively, they all serve the Dark Symmetry. And the Dark Symmetry is kind of an amorphous... it might be a thing, it might be an entity, or in at least one of the Mutant Chronicle books, it's described awesomely as evil math. It's people who know how to use the Dark Symmetry. It's very like Lovecraftian in it comes from another dimension. It's unnameable and unknowable, and if you know too much of it, your brain will definitely snap. But if you can know how to wield some of the Dark Symmetry, you can be like 11 plus donut equals fireball, and it worked. you know, like that equation in your brain, the dark symmetry goes, ah, yes, 11 plus donut equals fireball. And it actually, you know, happens in reality. So like in the game, in the game, you dark symmetry has always been like just spells. You know, it's this particular guy can do this weird spell. But in the fiction, dark symmetry is all the way down to like puppeteering entire crowds, walking through walls, you know, basically just explaining a door, the equation to make it insubstantial so you could walk through it. It's a much deeper weirdness, but the longer you use dark symmetry, the more you become perverted by it, until eventually you either, you know, your mind snaps or you become one of these horrible creatures, and then you're so far away from humanity that you are a member of the Dark Legion and there's no question. And the game, the main setting is basically all the corporations, they all blame each other for all the horrible things that are happening. It's a combination of territory wars and a collective good versus evil. But so much puppeteering and manipulation happens, you often don't know which side you're actually working for. You're just doing your job, and then at some point, you know, you might realize, oh man, I was working for the wrong guys for a really long time.
I mean, I do really expect math equals evil stickers at some point. I feel like that's the way to go. But that's a really cool background, and I think it has like a lot of unique kind of things going for it, especially just in the way that like the technology level is really set in almost in that like World War II-ish kind of era for a lot
Very
of people.
Much, yeah.
But it's still in the future, and there's
have big tanks. They exist, but you don't have like. If you have a hover tank, it only hovers because it probably has like 50 fans blowing downward. It's not like anti-gravity. It's legitimately a hover, like a hover track, you know, like the kind of thing that you can buy at Radio Shack.
Fair.
Oh, mercy.
So kind of moving along from the story in the background, what do you think separates Warzone from other sci-fi war games?
Well, depending on which version of Warzone that you're talking about, I remember I got into Warzone, I got into the first edition of Target Games Warzone because it was the first time I had really seen a high sci-fi, but in a skirmish feel. Because that was before Infinity. That was the closest thing to it was, Void from I-Corps, and Vor was, but those games still had pretty large model counts overall, whereas first edition Warzone still only had, you know, like maybe like 15 guys on the field, and that felt weird coming from 40K, you know, because everything was 40K back then for the most part, or it was you're not playing a skirmish game at all, you're playing Battletech, you know, you've got five models, you know, like that's not a skirmish, it's its own kind of mecha game. But when it came to like hardcore sci-fi runaround soldier games, you went from 40K and then to slightly fewer models with things like Void and Vor and, there's another one that's on the tip of my tongue and I can't think of it. But Warzone had, that feel of I'm still in a war, even though I might only have 10 guys on the field. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that there were smaller vehicles running around. There were like jet bikes or at least like, you know, small flying vehicles, occasionally a little walking like dreadnought type thing, you know, that sort of thing. But it didn't take me 4 hours, because back in the day that was also, you know, that was at 40K's heyday when it was like 4 or 5 hour games. It didn't take you 4 or 5 hours to play a sci-fi war game. It might take you an hour and a half to 2 hours. And that was a kind of a big appeal to me. And I remember getting into Warzone because I want to say it was like third or fourth edition 40K, turned me off in a big way. Like I did not like the way the rules shifted, and I looked for another game to fill my, you know, to fill that time slot. And Warzone ended up being it because it was a, I still have cool soldiers running around. I'm still getting to fight against monsters, but it's not necessarily, it's not an Aliens game. It's not a, I'm not just fighting a bug hunt. If I go up against another force that is the monster force, he still has soldiers. You know, he still has guys with guns. And that was something that that I think spoke to me, is that, you know, demon forces that still have like regular grunt troops and stuff running around.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that got into Warzone around the end of the 90s. I think it was the transition from second ed 40K to third that turned a lot of people off. I mean, there may be people that didn't like third to fourth too, but I know a lot of people felt like third edition 40K cut a lot of flavor out, and they looked at something like Warzone with smaller model count, but models still had special rules. It felt like less of an abstraction that people liked. And I think there's some similarity in terms of the setting that it, I don't know if I call Warzone grimdark, but it's definitely not an optimistic vision of the future. I know people have also mentioned they like the background as a basis for the game, because there's a good reason why any force in Warzone would fight each other. So even if it's the same corporation fighting the same corporation, hey, it could be, you know, someone's manipulating them, there's some Dark Legion conspiracy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas in other games, it can be a little bit harder to be like, oh, well, I guess it's this Space Marine versus that Space Marine. They disagree on towel etiquette. I don't like
it. Right. Or it's a, the classic, it's a training exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're playing paintball. Yeah.
No, right. Like we're playing paintball with actual bullets and people are dying. Yay.
No, I completely agree. And that's, that is actually one of the things that we want to lean heavy. I'm not going to sales pitch, but we wanted to lean heavy into the fact that anybody can fight anybody, and there is good reason for it. There are personalities in the Mutant Chronicles history and Warzone history, actual characters that are from the corporations that are acting like, there's Warlord Staller, for instance, is a member of the Bauhaus Corporation, which is the very hardcore kind of Slavic, like German Slavic rank and file. We've got lots of guns. We march forward. We deal with things very pragmatic. And Warlord Staller, which is one of their personalities in the books, is revealed to be he ends up being basically puppeted by Algaroth, which is a one of the Dark Legion, I will call them saints, one of the apostles of the Dark Legion. And because he didn't realize for as long as he did that he was sending his people to war in the name of this murder god, not having absolutely no idea that that was what was going on, that that was who's actually signing his orders. It wasn't coming from high command. It was coming from Algarothian cultists steering this guy around. And at some point, it gets in front of him on his desk that he has sent tens of thousands of Bauhaus loyal soldiers to their death in the name of this war god, and he's about ready to do the final act. You know, he's about ready to eat a bullet, and he gets that whisper that says, you know, you could take this as a bad thing, or you can realize that you were fighting for the right side the whole time. And he gives in to Algaroth and ends up getting this amazing, his model is fantastic, from the old Target games. It's one of my favorite models. He gets this like chitinous bio suit, like almost out of the anime Guyver, that Algaroth packs inside of him. So he starts the game as a little Bauhaus soldier running around, this executive Bauhaus guy with a pistol and a Colonel Sanders haircut. And then at some point, like when he takes a wound, and this from the bullet hole, from whatever breaks his skin, out pours this bio armor, and he becomes this killing machine. I love the fact that this guy, narratively speaking, had no idea that he was working for the bad guys for a long time. And that gives you, there's an entire Dark Legion apostle that is dedicated to subterfuge and manipulation. Their whole point is to basically steer the humans against each other so nobody has any idea what's going on. So absolutely, when you play the game, you could have identical forces, you know, your army lists are exactly the same. You show up to a tournament and you go, oh, you're playing the Capital Sea Lions list too. Yeah, I'm playing the Capital Sea Lions list too. Well, depending on which side of the coin they end up, one guy could be fighting for evil and one guy could be fighting for good, and neither side have any idea. They both believe they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, I really have always liked that aspect of the universe, and I think the original edition of Warzone did a really good job of setting up situations like that. There was a lot of thought and love put into it, into making that interesting on the tabletop, and not just, oh, well, I take my net list, you take your net list, let's throw dice at each other and see who rolls better. Definitely a nice feeling there. I don't know how much you can say, but in terms of the new Warzone coming out, Warzone Eternal, is that going to be closer in scale to the first and second edition of Warzone, or is that going to be more of a company game, like something like Warzone Resurrection was?
So initially, to start things off, so a little bit of history. ResNova, the company who picked up the license and hired me to do the game, they are very small. They are a very, very small company. They're just a couple of employees and investors. They've done one other game. It was a card game before this one. This is their first real big kind of endeavor into an expensive ongoing property. And the reason that came up apparently is Alex, one of the owners of the company, is a huge Warzone file. Like he came from Mutant Chronicles First Edition. He was a huge fan of that sort of thing. Played through all the up through the editions, but also was a big fan of Dark Age. And so when they got their hands on the license, that was why he reached out to me, because he knew I wasn't working for CMON anymore. And he was like, hey, I trust your ability as a designer. I know you can do the feel for this game. And you've mentioned that you've played Warzone before. And that so it be kind of just sort of came a no-brainer for me to say yes to the gig. And so Alex, from the very beginning, has been, he doesn't want to get in over his head. You know, ResNova is a small company. He doesn't want to be like, let's, you know, do 50 SKUs coming out of the gate. So it is going to be kickstarted to start things off to help cover the initial costs. But the game itself is going to be start very low skirmish levels. I think right now in playtests, most people are running around with between 8 and 10 figures, so almost kind of infinity scale at the moment. Mm-hmm. But as a designer, I know I want to see this game grow to the point where it is more like more on the larger side of Dark Age, where you get, you know, 15, 20, 25 models on the side, maybe a couple of big guys, you know, get a tank, you know, not necessarily like one of those giant things that Protoss made, but like a strike skimmer, you know, a tactical vehicle. I would love to see the game get that big. And I mean, hell, if it got to the point where it is, you know, like, let's say, you know, this comes out perfectly well and ResNova starts making money hand over fist, there's nothing that says that they won't escalate this game further beyond there. But I know right now it's going to start skirmish level and very elite forces performing specific tasks on mission. And then our next step is to turn it into more of a mission deployment, you know, like rather than not necessarily having like, oh, 3 to 4 squads of guys, but you might see a group of 4 or 5 of the same unit running around together instead of one of these, two of this guy. Instead of a tactical team, it's going to be more of here's a deployment force. Is kind of what we're looking at to hopefully get to over a short amount of time, because I know that's where I want to get, just because of some of the models that I want to see our versions of are some of the larger models that don't make any sense in the skirmish game. It does not make sense to put a, you know, magic wielding super demon in a game where the opponent's side is like 7 human beings. Like it's like that's gonna that's
It seems a little one-sided.
The points might work out, but it's probably not going to work out in execution, or is going to be an execution, or it's going to at least kind of boring for one side because he's got one guy. You know, it's like, well, I move forward, I kill one of your guys, next turn. Yeah, like right. So. The goal is hopefully to make it so those larger models feel more at home and have a little more of a threat and a risk reward sort of thing on when the game escalates to a larger feel.
Right on. I know the initial version of Warzone, the sister game, Chronopia, had a squad-based system, which actually I think heavily inspired the early editions of Dark Ages squad system. Absolutely. You see yourself using squads initially, or do you see yourself going more with something like Dark Age, where you had rules that let models with the same name or same keywords activate together, but there weren't squads per se?
So as it is right now, the initial game set is, there's nothing stopping you from taking a squad of five of the same unit. You could be like, I'm bringing five Blood Berets, or mm-hmm. 10 Blood Berets or whatever. Like, there's nothing, if it fits into the points, it fits into the points. They are still going to be, for the most part, activated individually, like in Dark Age.
Okay.
But our system does have an action and reaction system, in the same way that some other games have started to use that, sort of to keep players involved on when it's not their turn.
Yep.
And rather than having a squad that says, or like a keyword situation where it's like, if me and three of these guys go at the same time, initially they're still going to activate separately. But if you've got a leader based structure, if you've got a squad sarge or a comms guy, somebody who might be able to shout orders to someone else, you basically can give them additional reactions to allow them to do more stuff on your opponent's turn, to kind of simplify the fact that your squad is more active because it has leadership.
Okay. Right on. That sounds like a really smart solution for that.
And then as the game progresses, perhaps we'll come out with actual like squad movements and things if the game gets large enough. But as it is right now, even with some of the larger playtests that we've done, to kind of see how far up the game can scale before it gets kind of weird, I've played a playtest game that had 25 models on a side. It was a lot of bookkeeping because it was 25 individual models on a side, and the game took forever, but it scaled up okay. I didn't feel like I was forgetting anything or that any of my models were necessarily useless. You know, like they were just, you know, meat sacks running around waiting to get shot. It just made the game larger, and it also choked up the battle because I didn't change the size of the table, which was, that's my fault.
I think it sounds like something where in the future it could lend itself well to like an escalation style tourney, which would always be interesting.
Well, so right now, just as, and this is also a way for us to lean into that whole good versus evil, you don't know necessarily who you work for sort of thing. There's actually, when you come to a game, you build your force and you build a sidebar, and the sidebar has models in it that you could be drawing from you could be drawing from forces that are good or evil. In the case of, you might be able to put a couple of Brotherhood agents in your sidebar, or a couple of cultists from the Dark Legion in your sidebar, because if you get into a battle, and depending on how the die roll, who chooses which side, are you the attacker, are you the defender, that sort of thing, you may end up being fighting on the side of darkness or on the side of light. You might not know. And if you do, you could swap some of those guys in or out. Like if you end up being on the dark side, so to speak, of a battle, if you're working for the Servants of Darkness in this battle, you go, okay, you know, there's a reason why I brought three of the Algaroth cultists in my thing, because I'm going to flip out my heavy machine gunner and put in two of these cultists because I want the extra bodies. And, you know, I'm playing evil in this particular match. That way you have a little bit of flexibility, and it gives us an opportunity that should two identical teams, two corporate teams come to the table, they're basically the same. If one's fighting for good and one's fighting for evil, if if they have an opportunity, they could alter their team just enough to fit in a little better with the narrative, or potentially fit in with the mission. You know, maybe that this particular mission is, for instance, one of the scenarios, one of the playtest scenarios anyway, is there is a very important target, a person of some kind on the map, and you need to go get them. And if you're on the Forces of Light, you have to basically have them unharmed and in your possession by the end of X number of turns. And if you're on the side of darkness, you score some points if they're not in, if he's not in the light side's possession, but you gain maximum points if you manage to kill him in close combat. Because okay. You want to make sure that he's dead. He doesn't get to talk about, you know, it's not a, oh, we shot him from far away and he's wounded. He could get better. You're killing him in close combat because you're basically sending a message to anybody else that might talk.
Right on.
So
I like it. I was going to say, it sounds like this is going to segue really nice into the next kind of area, which is what are some reasons that someone might want to play Warzone? Because I can think that, you know, if scenarios are asymmetrical, some people do find that very interesting. Because it really leads to a lot of replayability of the scenarios when you can approach them from different angles with different play styles.
Absolutely. And that's, we are hoping, Alex and I have talked at great length, that the scenarios that are in the main book are a good start. You know, here's a good collection of ways for you to kind of get started playing. And then on top of that, we want to, as time moves on, you know, maybe every couple of weeks, release like here's a new scenario PDF. You know, just something to keep people, you know, excited and moving and thinking about how they want to play and what they want to, you know, what they want to do, how they want to collect. Keep the players happy while we are, you know, working up to the next wave of minis or whatever. But then one of the things that Target Games did in their second edition that we Alex and I both loved, we're like, this is amazing, is they had these terrain-based scenario packs that mm-hmm. was like, this, here's a, inside here, there's a cardboard cathedral that you can put together. It came with one good guy figure, one bad guy figure, the rules for those two guys, and then like five scenarios based around that piece of terrain. I love that. I think that those are some of the, it's the cool, like this, just a great thing to, you know, as a gaming group, you go, okay, we get a piece of terrain, you know, Owen gets a cool model for his force, Chris gets a cool model for his force, we get a new piece of terrain for our collective set, and we've got five new missions that we can, that are probably going to be a little leaning specifically toward this this thing. But they're fun narrative missions that almost always include one of those two models that came with the kit. It's like a little mini campaign that lets you dig your teeth into it, but then you still have something permanent afterwards. Like instead of just, I've played through these five scenarios, okay, it's done, and I spent my money in these scenarios, you actually still have something to come to take home with you. There's still, you know, that terrain piece or the models or whatever. That you can then add to your forces as normal, you know, like just, he still has regular rules. He still can do whatever you're going to do. We loved those. And Alex and I have talked at great length that is definitely, some footsteps that we would like to, if given the opportunity to be able to follow in those footsteps with making similar situations like that, whether or not it has terrain involved, you know, that's a monetary situation because cardboard terrain, you know, in the 90s, punch out terrain that you glue together was awesome. But now that's kind of seen as less than a fantastic product, but we might be able to, knowing the fabricators that we're going through for the miniatures and things, you know, they make good terrain already. So it might be something that instead of being a flat pack, you know, box set, it might be more of a legitimate style box set that has a 3D piece of terrain in it instead or something like that.
Nice. Do you see that as being tied to like organized play, or is that more going to be like a fun scenario piece for people just to enjoy?
I think that it would be it'll probably be something that'll be a general public kind of thing.
Okay.
You know, just say, here's something that we're selling. But then it would be very easy to tie something like that into OP. You can easily say, you know, as a tournament organizer, make sure you grab one of these and then run this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who owns quite a few Dark Age branded OP specific terrain pieces, I definitely I think that would be an interesting way to do OP each year. But I can also imagine pros and cons there. I just didn't know where you were thinking of going.
I was going to say, between the two of us, how many caravans do we have right now?
Yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about the future war zone, so I guess I want to open it up to you. You know, generally speaking, there's a lot of sci-fi games on the market these days. Why might someone be really excited for Warzone or Warzone Eternal?
Our hope is that, so Paul Bonner was one of the original Mutant Chronicles artists. He has a very particular style. And it's a cool style. Like you've seen his art, lots of different things. It's a lot like with Dark Age, where people know Brom's art at a glance. A lot of people will know Bonner. They know Bonner art at a glance. They go, oh, okay, I know, I know this style. I know that sort of thing. And back in the 90s, the models were styled after Bonner art. The technology just wasn't there, and so a lot of them came out really clunky. Great models for the time, but you know, I've mentioned this before in other interviews and things, that the Adeptus Astartes Space Marine has not really changed in 30 years. He's basically the same guy. Yeah, the shape of the helmet might change, or he goes from beaky to flat to Space Marine to Stormtrooper. You know, like the slight alterations, but for the most part, every time there's a new Marine, it's the only thing that changes is the crispness of the model, the technology that creates the model, how many poses we can get out of them, how many doodads do they force onto the model that look okay, how many of them are on there because they have to be on there, you know, that sort of thing. That's kind of what we're hoping, is that because the Bonner feel, that style really has a very cool place. But up until recently, the technology just really hasn't been there to translate it well into miniature form. And so now we're hoping that now that technology is there, we can take some of those iconic feeling models and stylizations and have a new version of those models come out that actually look just as slick as, you know, anything else that's coming out of the market, without stealing away from that old feel, that old diesel punk feel. And that's actually one of the things that, in my personal opinion, that Protoss took a pretty hefty step away with Resurrection, is they went more toward like an Infinity feel, where it was very ergonomic. You know, slim down those shoulder pads, make those swords and pistols normal sized again. You know, instead of it being that kind of old, oversized, superheroic scale and scope, it was more of a streamlined sci-fi game, which is fine, you know, but there were definitely models that when you compare them to the old art, to the original Mutant Chronicles art, you go, these do not come from the same universe. And
yes,
that's what we want to try and get back to. We want our models and the stuff that you see on the battlefield to represent that old Mutant Chronicles feel, that old Warzone feel, but having a game that plays like one of today's games, that looks more like one of today's games when it comes to the miniatures themselves. And I think, with not to pat myself on the back, but with our system that we've got with the action reactions, I believe that even though people only have, you know, 10 models to a side, you're going to see some very tight, very tense games. And especially when people can start playing in game stores again, combination of good minis and games where you can watch and definitely tell that the two people playing are having to tactically think it out. It's not just a matter of, well, here's my 24 dice, you know, like, oh, what are you doing? Same thing I did last turn. You know, like an actual tactically sound game with cool models, I think will draw people to the table and hopefully a lower price point because of needing fewer models to start will get more people to go, ah, I'll throw $30 in. Yeah, why not? You know, let's give it a shot. And then once they actually play the game, similarly to what I had said about Dark Age in the past, is once you get someone to play a game that is as good as Dark Age was, or in this case, in my opinion, what Warzone Eternal is going to be, once I get you rolling dice and get you understanding the play of the game, I can walk away from that table knowing that you are now a Warzone Eternal player. I don't want to pat myself on the back or anything, but we did it with Dark Age, and I think there's enough of a spiritual succession from there to here. I'm gonna let you in on how to make the sausage a little. The Alex hired me because of my work with Dark Age. And initially, I was very hesitant, very, very hesitant when I was designing stuff for Warzone Eternal to put too much Dark Age in the soup, so to speak, because I did not want it to turn into, oh, Brian is a one-trick pony. If you put sci-fi miniatures in front of him, it's going to be Dark Age Mark 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. Despite the fact that, you know, everybody loved, you know, there's still a very rabid fan base for Dark Age, and they would love to have another version of it. I don't want to just basically cookie cut one product onto the next. It would feel wrong. Well, I remember a meeting we had with Alex where he brought up an idea on how to change something because one of the playtesters had brought something up, and it really did scream, this is an easy solution, just do the easy solution, damn it. And I was like, no, because if I do the easy solution, that's basically just kind of like copying something from Dark Age, and I don't want to do that. And Alex very plainly was like, I hired you because of Dark Age and because of the success that you had bringing the game back from the brink of death. There's nothing wrong with paying a little homage to your former successes. And so we changed a couple of things in the rule set. And one of those things was that blatant, just one, like it, one of those, I'm looking at my options and one is glowing with a neon sign that says, pick me, pick me, pick me. And I'm like, no, I can't pick you. I can't have you be my favorite child. You know, like, no, I have to do something else. And finally, I was like, all right, fine. We'll pick the neon sign. And of course, exactly like Alex had said, the next playtest round, famously, all the playtesters were like, oh my God, that change is fantastic. It's amazing. It's perfect. And I just kind of had to shut up and go, all right, sometimes you do just have to Occam's razor it and take the choice that makes sense. So there are a few things that people will see in Warzone Eternal if they were a Dark Age player, and they'll go, that looks awful familiar. I don't want you to, the rest of the game is not like that. It's definitely drastic in the rest of the way. But there are a couple of things that definitely herald back to Dark Age because it's just a good dice mechanic that works.
So what I'm hearing is we should expect a sixth apostle that's based upon Mayan mythology. And that sounds awesome.
When we eventually get back to the tribes of Earth, there will be a fifth tribe, and the tribe will be creepy Mayans. There we go.
I don't know. I think Brian learned his lesson from Dark Age. He doesn't need me mispronouncing everything for an entire game all over again.
Chris, do not read the Dark Apostles. You are going to cry.
Oh, is there more tuna chucks?
There is a yeah. So when you hear it, Mawawe is very easy. When you look at how it's spelled,
So Mawawe is the apostle of madness. He is literally the part of the dark symmetry that causes you to snap. So he's a nightmare creature, and his name doesn't make any sense. Except in my head, every single time I have ever heard Mwawahe, it always comes with a little dance number. Mwawahe. and it, you know, he's got the Zenithian soul slayers. And so, yeah, you will have some pronunciation issues, but the only one that does not read like it, or doesn't sound like it reads as Mwawahe, because it's got a J and a W and an extra H in there.
In terms of old school flavor, are you keeping the Mark One like jagged templates, or are we going to get something more circular?
Jagged templates. What do you mean?
So the explosion templates in the original Warzone.
So we are. That was actually an arm wrestling match between Alex and I. He really likes templates, and I used to like templates until I ran tournaments.
yep.
Because they really do become problematic if someone's template is maybe a millimeter short because they bought them from a third party source, or you know, because I'm 6'8" in the case of my friend John Derman, you know, he looks out of the table and the template is in a completely different skew when he's fighting against Terry LaTorco. Yep. You know, like who is for
fair.
You know, like it's so rather than that, but also I did not want to go to the extreme that like Warhammer 40K did, where it was like now there are no explosions at all. There's just I can hit this unit more times. We went with kind of point of impact measure outward.
Okay, awesome.
So this particular weapon, it in effect, there is a 3-inch template there, a 3-inch blast that comes from point. But instead of having an actual template that you're referring to, you use a measuring stick and you measure your 3 inches all around from the point of impact.
Nice. That seems like an elegant solution.
Which is also nice for people because they need less stuff.
Yeah.
Need less stuff. And honestly, if third party companies decide they want to make like a measuring widget that does 3 to 6 inches or whatever, that looks like a elementary school compass, but maybe less sharp. Sure, rock and roll. You know, I would never say no to that. You know, it's just it, like you said, it's less stuff that we have to create at a base level for people to play the game.
Cool. Well, we are we're coming up on an hour, so we should probably start wrapping this up. We have a couple questions we ask all our guests, Brian, so we're going to ask you those. So first question, what is your favorite Dead War game?
My favorite Dead War game, I am utterly biased, and it is still Dark Age. I know a lot of people say it's not dead because, you know, technically there is still a company that owns it, and they could always decide to, you know, reissue things in the future. But I think we all know, sadly, that unless something dramatically changes, where that game was going... I don't want to pat myself on the back or anything, but like where that game was going ended when I left that company. And it is still probably my favorite game.
Well, first of all, congratulations on picking the correct answer. And secondly, I agree that, you know, I think with, you know, over 2 years with no releases, no one knows what the future is going to hold, but I'd say for at least the short term, I think that's functionally a dead war game. Yeah. Are there any Dead War games you think people should know more about?
Yeah, you know what? I think there is an old Games Workshop game that occasionally they pop. They might someone whispers about it and goes, oh, "Is it coming back?" And it never does. Is Battlefleet Gothic?
Okay.
That was one of the and hell, I helped design a call to arms for Babylon 5, and I still think Battlefleet Gothic was better. it was just a very eloquent, good system. Had that, you know, just enough weird fiddly rules that you knew you were playing a Games Workshop game, but enough just flavor in the models themselves. And like you could look at one of these models and go, "This is a flying cathedral." You know, like they did such a great job. I would love to see Battlefleet Gothic get a resurgence, especially now that, like, with Adeptus Titanicus taking off and everyone, like, really kind of getting into the feel of larger models being played at a smaller scale, I think they could do wonders with bringing back the various fleets of the... honestly, what I would love for them to do is do an all Xenos version, because the Adeptus Titanicus is just Chaos and Imperial. I would love for them all of the Xenos spacecrafts and be like, no, the Imperials, they have their own game. they get to go. Give us our UFOs.
Nice.
That would be pretty interesting.
Is there anything you want to give a shout out to?
Man, I don't know. I am a huge fan of, I'm actually wearing a shirt right now from Dust 1947. I'm a big fan of their stuff. And I know COVID hit them pretty hard in distributions and fabrication. They're still doing strong, which is awesome. But I think if anybody is into that kind of diesel punk style, if they don't, that World War II with a weirdism, they haven't had a chance to get into Warzone Eternal yet because we haven't started it yet. They should totally check it out because I know shortly, it was supposed to be this last Christmas, I think, but I think it got pushed back a year. There's a whole new army coming out, and I really want to see that game stay strong enough that the new army can be released in mass and compete. So
you just want to play with Vril.
I do. I'm not saying I'm being selfish, but I'm being selfish. I really want my weird little bubble. I want my bubble-headed aliens.
Well, since you mentioned it, if people want to go back a few episodes, if this was your first episode, we do actually have a Dust 1947 episode up.
Oh, cool.
And available.
I'll have to go back.
Yeah, and actually with Greg and Alicia. It's a good time.
Cool. Anything else, Chris?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, well, we're talking about shout-outs. I mean, obviously, like we mentioned before, Brian has his YouTube channel, which is Tales from a Professional Nerd. It's a lot of fun. It's generally very entertaining. yeah, I'd suggest checking it out. It's definitely one of my go-tos when I'm painting and stuff like that, so it is fun. and then just, I guess, a couple more quick questions, but... first off, for Warzone, for new people coming to it, you know, if you're trying to get the fluff as quickly as possible, is going the movie route and checking out the Ron Perlman movie the way to go?
Okay. Zing! So, here's the deal. There are about three movies that have really good Warzone feel. The actual Mutant Chronicles movie isn't one of them. It has its moments. It's showing you what a cartel unit would look like if all of them were made out of all of the superheroes from, you know, like they basically created a Avengers of all of the named characters from the Mutant Chronicles and were like, and we're gonna put them together. The first part of that movie where it shows the Bauhaus versus Capitol kind of trench war, or Bauhaus versus Imperial trench war, that's actually a pretty good scene. It gets into the fact that they are still in a situation where it's bayonets attached, you know, run up and over the top. The fact that all of the Necromutants look identical and that they all have a weird sword growth on their arm, very strange, weird choice. I'm sure it was budget related. overall, the movie it misses the point. It definitely misses the point. Is it entertaining? Sure. Does it make you go, oh, okay, there's ninjas and German guys and Thomas Jane, okay. But it doesn't necessarily paint the right picture. The three movies that I actually think are what I would consider standard viewing. If someone was like, give me a good taste test of Warzone as a feel. First and foremost would be Ghosts of Mars.
Okay.
Ghosts of Mars is a sci-fi horror movie starring Ice-T and Jason Statham, Pam Grier, one of the guys from Revenge of the Nerds. It's actually got a pretty decent cast in it, and it is basically, there is a evil seal that has opened up on Mars and it lets out a bunch of horrible things and all of the miners start to kind of fall into this ancient alien cult. And there's a whole bunch of nasty weapons and people getting their heads cut off. And it is the closest thing to a Mutant Chronicles movie that I've ever seen. And then the other two aren't so much Mutant Chronicles in like Warzone sort of feel as it is more of a these feel right to get you the same the right kind of tension in a space game that's still filled with like legitimate Cthulhu horror, and that would be Event Horizon.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Pandorum.
Yep. I can see both of those.
Pandorum at least even has like creepy mutants running around and stuff. The technology might be a little higher in Pandorum than it should be, but maybe it's like a Cybertronic vessel or something. So, but yeah, those three movies, I would definitely say if someone wants to do like a 7-hour watch marathon and go, all right, I think I have an idea of where Brian's headspace is when he's writing Warzone fiction, that would be it. And speaking of Warzone fiction, our very, very recently unveiled Facebook group for Warzone Eternal, accidentally so, we are going to start putting up some, you know, kind of cool flavor pieces and stuff here pretty soon. So that way, cool. There's going to be a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of people talking, but I'm hoping to get some pieces up there to help get people to understand kind of where we're coming from and where we're thinking about when we're talking about the feel of the game.
Right on. Nice. And then next up. So in a world where Aquaman doesn't exist, what is the best DC movie?
Shazam.
Yeah, that's the correct answer.
followed very shortly behind by Man of Steel. I think Man of Steel is one of the best Superman movies ever made, with a couple of hiccupy points. But Shazam as a movie is it touches on every part of the character. There are a couple of hokey moments that are purposefully hokey because it's got, you know, it's for that kid factor. But there are a couple of moments that legitimately give you like adult chills if you're that deep into superheroes. Leaves it nice and open-ended and did a great job of attaching itself to the DCEU at a time where the agents were telling the movies that they didn't know whether or not there was going to be more DCEU or if it was everything was going to be standalone. They did a great job of tying it in without making it integral viewing.
Right.
Which I think is actually a huge misstep with the MCU, is that every single one of those movies, if you don't watch it, you miss something that one of the other movies is going to refer to.
Right on. I actually thought of another question I wanted to ask you, Brian. Do you have a favorite named character in Warzone?
Favorite named character in Warzone? Sebastian Crenshaw.
Okay.
Well, you know what? And then Warlord Staller. I really like him. But of the human side of things, Sebastian Crenshaw is a Brotherhood assassin who in a lot of the stories shows that he has, you know, he does the church's job. He does the church's business. He's very much a holy assassin, but there's a little bit of the realist in him that knows that, the church is just another company. It's just another corporation. And so it's kind of nice to see someone, you know, you see a lot of holy assassins that are so zealous, so pious. There can be no questioning. He's got a little bit more of a realistic head on his shoulders, but he's going to get the job done.
Anything else, Chris, or is that, that about it?
I think that's about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Brian, for being here. Really appreciate talking to you. This has been an eye-opener for me. I'm really excited for Warzone Eternal now. I look forward to backing that Kickstarter. And yeah, thanks again for swinging by. Anything else you want to say before we log off?
Just that everybody please stay safe. For those of us that for the last 20 years, our life has been conventions and you know, visiting game stores and things. This pandemic has really, you know, kind of put a big crimp on the whole thing. So even if you think it's stupid, please mask up and stay safe. That's all I really got.
Amen to that. On that happy note, this has been Owen.
And I'm Chris.
Oh, and I'm Brian. I didn't want to get in the way of your sign off.
And this has been the Dead War Gamer Society. Thank you. Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.